It's time for everyone's favorite podcast on the web. Pivot off the wall. Where you get the best sports talk and info in New York.
You lollygag the ball around the infield. You lollygag your way down to first. You lollygag in and out of the dugout. You know what that makes you, Larry?
Lollygag.
Lollygaggers. What's our record, Larry?
8-16.
8-16. How'd we ever win 8?
It's a miracle.
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
It's an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. And here's your host, Chris Sheeran.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. Just a reminder, the Off the Wall podcast is brought to you by DirecTV. Don't just watch TV, DirecTV. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. The usual players are here, Joe Auriemma, Chris Sheeran, live on tape from my office, and our special guest star today. We've already used Chips as an old 80s show with the special guest star. And if you let's go with Magnum PI today. Tom Selleck, very popular back in the 80s with that show. And if you saw the little special guest star font on the bottom of the screen, underneath that it would say Ian Eagle. Today, Ian, welcome.
Well, it's a pleasure. Tom Selleck is a hero, so for you to even put me in the same sentence with the mustachioed one is... It's an honor.
I think the mustache is in some kind of Hall of Fame, actually.
I think it is. What's going on with your facial hair, exactly?
Well, it was taken down in stages. Baseball season is a time that I choose to go without the facial hair for some reason. I don't know why, but I decide to do that.
Interesting.
Yeah. I have it for basketball. Maybe it's because I look like Jason Kidd. But I decided to take it down in stages, and I did have – the Thurman Munson after the goatee, that didn't really – I thought it looked good. No one else did, including my wife. Then I brought it down to the 70s stash. That wasn't really cutting it, so I just decided to cut it off.
Hold on. This is so fascinating. I need to have a cup of coffee just to, to wake myself up.
All right. Let's get into the – matters that we should be getting into besides my facial hair, because I think that is a big topic.
Yes.
But a much bigger topic, the NBA trade deadline, and more specifically the team that we cover here on Yes, the Nets, they really came out of nowhere like a snake in the grass and got Darren Williams from the Utah Jazz for Derek Favors, Devin Harris, and a couple of picks. So what does this mean, Ian, for the Nets moving forward to Brooklyn in 2012?
Yeah, you know, the first thing, Chris, was we've gotten to a point now in professional sports where very little can shock us. There's so much speculation, obviously, with Twitter accounts and blogs and Facebook. Information is passed along at a record rate. To actually have a deal like this take place, where it seemingly came out of thin air, is so rare. And it just felt kind of like that old school, old style trade that we used to hear about, but in this day and age, we just don't get anymore. It was like a soap opera, that bum, bum, bum moment. You didn't expect it, and it happened. And I give Billy King a great deal of credit, Bobby Marks, the assistant GM. And the difference in this deal, as opposed to so many others that take place, I don't believe that this was 5 months of conversation going back and forth. Well, let me talk to my people, you talk to your people. This was just a good, strong basketball relationship between Billy King and Kevin O'Connor,
right.
A trust.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nets get themselves one of the premier players in the NBA and a point guard that they believe they can build around. They've been looking for a cornerstone. They've been looking for a star player. That has been no secret with LeBron James initially, and then Carmelo Anthony, and now Darren Williams is a Net. It is huge in terms of the basketball side of things, and I think on the business side as well, as this team tries to create an identity as they lead up to their big move to Brooklyn for 2012.
Right. Now, you know, I think every reporter there tried a different way to ask him if he was going, if he knew what he was going to do in 2012 when
right.
he was a free agent. I think the only question that wasn't asked a certain way, and it's the same question asked 50 million different ways. I would have asked it. Now, Darren, if there was a nuclear holocaust and the Knicks and Nets were the only teams left on the planet,
yeah.
Who would you choose? I know no one would come to ask that because it's just off the wall like myself. But see what I did there. But anyway, do you think this is like a period, Ian, that it's a tryout period for the Nets with Darren. See, if they bring in a couple more players, if they're able to surround him with some a good supporting cast,
right.
and he can get another player in here, do you think he will be the starting point guard when they move into that building in Brooklyn?
Well, let's deal with the first part of it, which is all the questions that were thrown Darren Williams' way. And understandably, that's part of the job of the media. You have to ask these questions.
Absolutely.
What the fans want.
Absolutely.
So clearly that was going to be part of the equation. I think Darren deep down knew that he was going to have to field these questions. What I truly believe is that he doesn't know that this has been a whirlwind for him over a 24-hour period. He went from leaving the only team that he knew in his NBA career. He was in Dallas, which happens to be his hometown. He gets the news on a scroll that this was breaking. He wasn't told by his team at
that point. Kind of like Bob Hope saw that he was dead when he was still alive.
It's wild. So he then flies to Salt Lake City to pack and talk to his family, then takes a red eye to New Jersey to take the physical and then be a part of the press conference. At that moment, I'm not sure Darren Williams knows which way is up, let alone what his plans are for the future.
That's a fair point.
And I do think that because the CBA is certainly a question mark.
Still up in the air.
Yeah, you've got a lot of players that don't know where they stand. Darren Williams, by the way, and something that really hasn't been talked about, does have another year left on the deal beyond 2011-2012. It's just assume that he would opt out of a $17.4 million contract for that year. If this CBA comes down and there is the level of changes that the owners want to make, that might actually turn out to be a pretty good number for Darren Williams to stay in on.
Right.
And we're not having this conversation then for another year beyond it. So that's the first part. The second part, you know, there's no doubt that the Nets have to go about things in a different manner than some other teams. They have to be a little more creative. And in this case, I think similar to Jason Kidd, and there are a lot of similarities in this deal compared to the one that the Nets made years ago with Kidd coming to the team, 10 years ago now. I mean, it's hard to believe.
Yeah, hard to believe.
I think the Nets were able to sell Jason Kidd on the idea that, hey, we're going to surround you with talent. You're in the New York tri-state area. You're going to benefit from that. You're going to get endorsements that you never saw in Dallas and in Phoenix. You're going to benefit from the media coverage. And he raised his persona in the league because he took a team that had gone nowhere for so long and brought them right to the precipice of winning a championship in two consecutive years. And I think his reputation was amplified tenfold because of it. I think Darren Williams is in a similar situation in that he comes from a small market in Salt Lake City. Darren is well respected around the NBA. He is considered by many the best point guard in the NBA. But when you come to a team and give them a jolt of credibility like Darren Williams is going to give the Nets, if they do turn it around, and I do think Billy King and Mikhail Prokhorov are serious about surrounding him with big-time talent, then I think, similar to Jason Kidd, his reputation will benefit, and you'll see the way he's viewed among his peers and among those on the outside of the NBA that follow the league probably go up exponentially as well.
Hey, Ian, how are you? It's Joe Auriemma.
Hey, Joe.
How's everything, buddy?
Good, man.
I actually wanted to ask you more of a Nets-Knicks question here with Darren Williams. Now, we know that the Nets got back into the Carmelo Anthony sweepstakes. They were big players. And do you think that that had something to do with the fact that they might have been driving up the price for the Knicks, that possibly that they knew that they could get Darren Williams on the back burner?
I don't think they had any idea about Darren Williams at that point. I really don't. I do think they're two separate issues.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that Mikhail Prokhorov got back into the Denver Nuggets conversation once Billy King said that the lines of communication are open again.
Right.
But that Prokhorov's feeling on the whole subject was, as a businessman, I can at least have an impact on how this affects the competition. And I believe he played a high-level poker game here, and he did force the Knicks' hand. James Dolan probably was affected by this and panicked a bit and decided to give up more than Donnie Walsh wanted to give up. And you have to give credit to a neophyte owner recognizing that, hey, it's still business, and the principle of business still comes into play. But if you're asking me that in the back of Billy King's mind, I could always get Darren Williams if this thing falls apart, I truly don't believe that they had that going on the back burner.
Very interesting. Now, yesterday you did a great job at the press conference. We all saw it right here on the Yes Network. You and Jimmy were tremendous, asking great questions to Darren. And really, the press conference itself was something that we haven't seen in New Jersey in a long time when it's surrounding a player. You know, when they introduced Prokhorov, the news was big.
Mm-hmm.
When they introduced Avery Johnson, the news was big. But this is really moving in the right direction for the Nets now that all of the hype and all of the feelings around that building yesterday and the good spirits were surrounding a player.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly things can change. And Chris understands being around the team. It's one of those things when you're losing at the rate that this team is losing, no matter how positive the coach is, no matter how positive the GM is, it takes a toll on these players. There's no getting around it, especially now, more than ever, where fans can connect with players more easily and players are absolutely more available than they used to be because of Twitter and social networking. Fans can share their opinion, and you can't just bury yourself in a hotel room and lock the door and just assume that nobody can get to you.
Right.
So I think this team needed something. They needed to be relevant more than anything else.
Totally agree.
Look, we understand the landscape in the New York area. Nobody is trying to paint a picture that's different than reality. The Knicks are king. They have always been king. And they will probably always be king. The one thing about the New York tri-state area is you have a lot of basketball fans. So there's enough room for two teams. When the Nets went to back-to-back finals, they did have support. That building, which I did a lot of years of broadcasts in, felt like a legitimate NBA arena for a stretch of time. And I believe that this team can flourish. There is room for two successful teams in the tri-state area, but the Nets do have to go about their business differently than the Knicks do. The Knicks have the selling point, which is the history of the organization, the world's most famous arena, and the allure of New York. The Nets have something exciting happening, which is Brooklyn. It's the air of mystery now, and not every player is going to be able to see that. I think trying to sell it to Carmelo Anthony and not having a tangible arena, something to show him, here, this is where you'll play.
Right.
They had the renderings. They have steel girders. They have pictures. But it takes a lot of vision for someone to say, yes, I see where you're headed. I want to be a part of it. I think Billy King has done an excellent job in a very short period of time of selling that idea to Darren Williams. And let me say this about Darren Williams. He's a competitive SOB.
Yes, he is.
He's going to play hard. He's a really prideful guy. And I think he will take the challenge of trying to raise the level of this team's play for the rest of this season. And then, obviously, let's see what happens next year. And hopefully, more than anything else, there's basketball to be played in the NBA.
You know what, Ian, you stole my thunder with the next question I was going to ask you about the level of play with this team. I'm not trying to knock Devin Harris at all, but when you have a guy like Darren Williams and the talent level that he, you know, has, I think we're going to see guys like Brook Lopez and Anthony Morrow and Travis Atwell. I think these guys are going to step their game up now, and I think Darren Williams is going to be a big part of it. Going through the rest of the season, what do you think their goal is with Darren running that offense?
I think more than anything else, it's for him to feel comfortable and for him and Avery to develop some chemistry together. Avery made it clear during the press conference and during the interview with me and Jimmy that hey, look, this is Darren Williams. This is not asking a player to fit into a certain system. This is a special player, and it's about creating something together. Every played the position. He gets it. And I know there's a feeling out there that he's the little general and he's tough on guys, and he is. He's tough on himself, and he was as an NBA player. He was a hardworking guy. He was a journeyman that bounced around, and finally found a home in San Antonio and became one of the most popular players in the franchise's history. And there's a reason for that. There's a passion that he brings. There's an energy that he brings. And it's going to be very different for Darren, who was accustomed to Jerry Sloan. Jerry was much more rigid, old school, a tremendous coach, a Hall of Fame coach. I don't know all the inner workings of what happened there. I think it's been a nice, convenient story for people to say, well, him and Darren Williams were clashing, so Jerry just left. I think a lot more goes into it than that. I really believe that. And I know how it works now. It's just easy to put that headline up. But for anyone that's around a team that knows the inner workings of a team, you always know there's more to the story than what's being reported. And I'm sure there's more to that story than what's being reported. I don't think Darren Williams is a coach killer by any stretch. Yeah, Darren's a pro. He's a legitimate leader. And he's got a very high level of expectation for himself, very similar to Avery Johnson in their approach. So I think the goal for the final stretch of games here, the rest of this season, is to get those two on the same page. And there is no doubt that Brooke Lopez, that Anthony Morrow, that Travis Outlaw, that Chris Humphreys, they all benefit from the presence of Darren Williams.
Absolutely. And, you know, you could even put some truth to the fact, Ian, that, you know, this is a tryout for everybody else, too. I mean, you know, let's see how everybody works with Darren, and we'll see what we can make out of this the rest of the season. The last one for me, buddy, is one of the most telling parts of that press conference yesterday, to me anyway, was when the question was posed to Darren about Jerry Sloan, and Avery stopped Darren in his tracks and came in and defended him, and it ended with an applause, and he basically said Darren could play and he could play as many minutes as he wants. I mean, he's basically going to make this Darren's team, and I think that's going to make or break this next year and a half with Williams.
Yeah, it's a great point, and I think that shows you a lot about Avery as well, that the reporter went down a road that Avery has been down himself. Look, Avery dealt with these questions in Dallas.
And it was a great question. It had to be asked.
Oh, legitimate question. I think it was Bruce Beck.
It was Bruce. Yes, it was.
Who's really one of the best in the business.
And he is, and it needed to be asked.
And he asked it in the right fashion. Mm-hmm. And I had no problem with Avery stepping in and defending his new player, because Avery has seen it from both sides as a player and as a coach, and as a guy when he was in Dallas that got let go after a very successful stretch there as the head coach, and many believe because, well, him and Kidd don't really mesh, and there were problems with him and Harris. So he's seen it. He knows how these stories can mushroom, and in this particular case, I think he wanted to nip that thing as quickly as possible and also take the onus off of Darren having to deal with it, because let's face it, he's dealt with it a great deal over the last 2 weeks, when a Hall of Famer that had been with the organization as long as he had, the longest tenured coach in professional sports, leaves. Somebody wants to know why, obviously, and, became the storyline.
I think Avery killed a lot of that noise when he came in and he defended his new player. And Ian, I think this is a good place to wrap things up, and I really want you to put it out there, because we talked about Bruce and we brought him up. You guys, you do a camp every summer, is this correct, for future potential broadcasters? You want to just plug that a little bit?
Yeah, I've actually brought a clip, if you want to play that. No, I don't have a clip. But you can go online. Bruce and I, this will be our 10th year of hosting this camp. It's for kids usually between the age of 13 and 17. We've had college kids in there. We've had some kids lie about their age, and they've gotten in as well. Some adults, when a guy walks in with a full-grown beard, and you go, really, 14? Huh.
I'm surprised I haven't walked in there.
Yeah, exactly. Back to the facial hair. That's really the general theme of the conversation. But you can check it out online, sportsbroadcastingcamp.com. We let the first 50 kids in, so that's the number that we max out at. It's been a wonderful experience. It's something I look forward to every year. And the amazing part now, because we are in year 10, we have kids that have attended the camp that have legitimate jobs in the business and have followed through from the ages of 14, 15. We also have an advanced camp that Mike Quick works at. He runs from MSG.
Another
varsity,
good one.
And another great guy.
Yep.
So, yeah, if you know anybody that wants to get involved, please pass along the information.
I definitely will. And, Ian, you know, I just want to end things with this. Bruce Beck asked that question yesterday, and to me, in my eyes, that elicited the best response out of Avery Johnson. So it would be very beneficial for anyone listening out there who has children who want to get into this business to go to this camp and deal with, in my eyes, two of the best people, not only at what they do, but best human beings in the business, and that is Bruce Beck and Ian Eagle.
Well, Chris, thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. Let me just say this, because I think people tune into this for a little more insight and behind-the-scenes knowledge. Chris and Joe, two of the best dancers at the Yes Network. And I've seen it. I've experienced it. I'm not just blowing smoke. Legitimate moves.
Oh, boy.
From both of you.
Oh, now we've had it. Ian, thank you very much. Safe travels. I know you're covering the Nets. You do a little college basketball with Raftery and Jimmer Spanarkle.
Yes. So, Jimmer will be there,
please.
And Raft.
Onions! Please keep up the great work. We will be following you throughout the tournament and throughout the rest of the Nets season. We appreciate the time today.
All right, guys.
Thanks.
Great to talk to you.
Thanks a lot, Ian.
See ya.
Want to see what everyone's talking about? Check out the 2-time Emmy Award-winning video content at YesNetwork.com. It's the best in Yankees web shows, podcasts, and features. Only at YesNetwork.com.
It's Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Here's more from Chris Sheeran.
Welcome back to the Off the Wall podcast, brought to you by DirecTV. Don't just watch TV, DirecTV. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Chris Sheeran, Joe Auriemma. Once again, a very special thanks to our special guest star this week, Ian Eagle. Just tremendous. Can't say enough about him. In my eyes, one of the best. If I had to make a top three play-by-play voices in sports right now, I don't care anywhere across the globe, Ian Eagle is in that top three. Not only, as I said before, for what he does, but a human being as well. He's just tops. He's aces in my book. So we want to thank him for stopping by once again to talk a little Nets basketball and the trade that went down for Darren Williams that does nothing but improve that Nets team. Now, Joe and I will be down in Tampa. We are flying down on Tuesday, late Tuesday, so we're not going to be able to do anything on Tuesday. But Wednesday, our week of constantly running around and getting you all the information we can begins, and it begins down in Gainesville, Florida, for a very special feature. It is the 50th anniversary of the home run chase of the M&M Boys in 1961, Mickey Mantle, Roger Maris, and we will be in Gainesville to interview three of Roger's sons, Randy, Kevin, and Rich, and possibly his daughter Susan will also be there. This is going to be on YesNetwork.com. It's going to be a feature on the pregame show. It's going to be featured in the spring training specials. Just look for this network-wide and on the internet. We're going to make this as special as we can make it. 1961, you know, should have been a very special season, all season for Roger Maris. But as you all know, whether you've read books, whether you were following him at the time, you know what the man had to go through, and now we're going to talk to his kids about that season and much more, and we're going to make a very nice piece for Yankee fans of all generations to enjoy. Whether you got to see him play, whether you were lucky enough to see that 1961 season, or if you want to live through us in our piece with his sons and his daughter possibly, you know, and you didn't get a chance to see him play, but through their eyes, you will see what their father went through and what that season was like. So we're going to bring that to you from Gainesville the first day. After we do that, Joe and I will do our regular spring training thing where we get as many player interviews as we possibly can, quality over quantity. We're going to get you the guys that you want to hear from, and it's all going to be on yesnetwork.com. We're going to do some features. You're going to hear from a kid who works at Steinbrenner Field. He's not a kid anymore, but when he got the job, he was a kid, and he got it from none other than George Steinbrenner, as Ray Negron, who got his start with the Boss after vandalizing the stadium with graffiti. He's there. He's still there. He wrote the book Henry and Me. It's going to be a motion picture that's coming out this season. Joe Girardi and his daughter Serena provide a couple of the voices, and a star-studded cast, Curtis Granderson as well. So we're going to talk to Ray. We're going to talk to Robert Vallee. He is the last Boss's find. It's just a touching story. We're going to bring you that feature as well as more. We are going to knock it out of the park when we go down there for spring training 2011, and I'm going to let Joe tell you a little bit more.
All right, so like Chris said, we're going to be down there from March 1st. We're going to get there late. March 3rd is really going to be our day of reporting because, like Chris said, on March 2nd, we're going to be in Gainesville, Florida. Chris is going to be there until the 9th, and then he's heading home. But he's doing a couple of the Yankee spring training reports. I will be there from until the 14th, blogging, you know, doing video. We've got Jack Carey on board to do Diamond Dailies with us again, giving us a wrap-up of what's going on in the clubhouse. And, you know, one thing that we've seen on YesNetwork.com and my Yes is you guys want to hear from the kids. You want to hear not just from the big-time players, but you want to, you know, hear from a Dellin Betances. You want to hear from a Manny Banuelos. You want to hear from Noesi and Brackman and Montero. And we're gonna get you all those guys. We want to make sure that, you know, we get who you guys want to hear from. And that seems to be what everybody's kind of thirsting for right now. It's the youth movement, and we're going to try to get that for you guys. So, like I said, it's going to be a good 2 weeks' worth of coverage. So get ready, because it starts next week.
Joe, couldn't have said it any better than that. For Joe Auriemma and Ian Eagle, once again, this is Chris Sheeran, and we will see you, and you will hear us. The next time you hear us, you will hear us live on tape, direct from Tampa, Florida. We'll be covering the Yankees spring training 2011. This is the Off the Wall podcast brought to you by DirecTV. Don't just watch TV, DirecTV. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. We will see you from Tampa next week.